Home energy options for this winter and future winters. When it comes to heating your home this winter, the good news is there are so many more options than ever before. The bad news is there are so many more options than ever before. How on earth do you figure out the best, most efficient, least expensive, and most reliable solution for your home? Are you intrigued by heat pumps, thinking about high-efficiency gas, deciding between weatherization options like replacing your windows or insulating your basement? And whatever you choose, are there incentives to help you pay for it? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we'll talk with experts who think about these issues all the time. So go ahead, send us your questions about keeping your home warm this winter. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Brr, it's cold out there. Well, today we're going to get tips on how to keep your home warm in the most efficient way possible this winter. With me in our studio, Michael Stoddard, the Executive Director of Efficiency Maine. Tux Turkle, a staff writer focusing on energy with the Portland Press Herald. And Richard Regal Burbank, President and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. Thank you all for being here today. And as always, we want to hear from you, our listeners. What steps have you taken to lower your home heating bills? What questions do you have about your options? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. You know, we couldn't be having this conversation soon enough. Places in Maine are going to see single-digit nights this week. And Richard, I want to have this conversation on a few levels, if I can. And one of them are, what can I do right now? And then let's talk about what maybe we can do this season. And then long-term planning in terms of what can I do over the next few years to button up my home. And so, Richard, I live in Greenville, Maine. I see that tonight it's going to be 7 degrees. Wednesday night it's supposed to be 1 degree. What do I do right now?
Well, I'm in homes all the time doing an energy evaluation, and I'm shocked at the number of homes in winter that still have their windows open. So make sure all your windows are closed.
Like open sash pushed up window?
No, just locked. They're a little bit ajar. And so they're leaking air, and on the top floors are the biggest problem because that's where the heat is leaving. On the bottom floors, people are better at it. The other thing is if they have a fireplace and they're approaching winter, they might have forgotten that the flue is still open, and they have this big hole just dumping heat right up the chimney, literally. So, and then the basement, if they have any basement hatch that they rig up or a door in their basement bulkhead, making sure those are all closed. And then a final thing is if you haven't had your heating system serviced, get on the list because it's very important for its not only its efficient operation, but for its safe operation.
Great practical tips. But I want to go back to the first one. You say make sure your window's closed. You know, I think a lot of people think that the latches on the window are for security.
Right.
You know, I lock my window to be safe. But you're also locking your window to push the two sashes together so that your window's not going to leak.
Yep. And that's often difficult in some windows. There are some windows over time, like some vinyl windows, for example, that you do that and it doesn't quite catch and it pushes the hole even bigger. So just double check your work. So some, it's better just to make sure they're nice and secure, pushed up and down, and the lock doesn't really help you. But
so before we move on to talk about middle and long-term options, I just want to ask Tux and Michael, do you have anything to add to Richard's list?
Well, the windows are a big thing, but I also think for people who even have decent windows, it's nice to cover them at night with either curtains or cellular shades or almost anything that puts an air barrier between the glass.
Lots of people do the clear plastic. That does make a difference, mm-hmm. doesn't it?
That's another thing.
Absolutely.
I just would chime in to check your thermostat. A lot of people have thermostats now that control more than one thing. If you've been using your system to provide air conditioning during the summer, It may still be set on that mode to make the house cooler. It's heating season now. You want to switch that mode to heat. And if people have a heat pump, a lot of those heat pumps have a remote control, and it has a setting on it that's set at auto. So it will choose based on whether it's warmer or less or cooler than what the temperature setting is you have. You could come home on a sunny day in December and discover that your living room has been air conditioned down to 6 degrees or 60 degrees or wherever you had it during the summer if you have it on auto mode. So we recommend people do not use auto mode for their heat pump thermostats on the remote control, but instead set it to heat in the winter.
Great point, because if you've got an auto for the, let's say you're trying to save money in the summertime and you have it on auto for 77 degrees or something, you don't want the heat bringing your home up to 77 degrees.
Well, but what happens is sometimes it can get flipped upside down. So it can, sun can come pouring in your windows in the cold, on a cold day, outside cold, but in your living room it might be get fairly warm and trick that thermostat into thinking it needs to turn on the air conditioning. And so you can walk into your house and discover that it's been chilled instead of warmed, which we don't want to have happen.
All right. Well, moving on, Michael, you mentioned heat pumps. Tux, you wrote an article for the Portland Press Herald. What month was that? And tell me about the reaction.
Was it September, Michael?
It was October. But who's counting?
So this was a seminal moment in both of your lives, it sounds like.
Well, it really hit home for it because it really trended like it was a top story that weekend. And I think it's because there's just a lot of interest in heat pumps. And how they're operated now is like the next level of discussion. Not, oh, there's a new thing out there, but how do you use them correctly? And Michael's outfit is telling people, you know, set it and forget it. Meanwhile, the oil dealers are saying, oh, you know, you should use your boiler in the winter. So there's
So let's back up a little bit. For people who maybe haven't been focusing on energy options for the last 4 or 5 years or even 2 or 3 years, what is a heat pump? What is this heat pump thing I hear my neighbors talking about? How does it work?
Well,
Tux looks at Michael with a grin.
His outfit is promoting heat pumps.
Okay.
It is.
That's true. We are promoting all manner of high-efficiency heating systems, and heat pumps is one of them. And we're pretty excited to be able to report that more than 30,000 homes in Maine have put these newest generation of very high-efficiency heat pumps that are designed specifically to function well in cold climates, like Maine. These, it has to be noted, are not the same as the prior generation heat pump from the 90s and the 2000s, which did not do a great job in cold weather. But these ones do. They will make heat down to minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit. So we have been doing a lot of research this summer and fall to see how well they're working and what kind of experience people are having. And if there are any tips we can give to people about how to get the maximum potential out of them, because one of the things we're learning is people are not getting the maximum potential. They are either turning them off, or maybe they are getting turned off. They are switching themselves off because they're interacting with the central heating system, and the central heating system is beating them out. And so there are some things people can do to get them to run more, because it turns out that they are the highest efficiency way to make a unit of heat. And they also, over the course of the entire winter, will be the lowest cost. So we want people to enjoy the benefit of that cost. They've spent the money to invest and put in this nice piece of equipment, and we want people to get the most out of it.
So a heat pump is something that's installed on an exterior wall. It can work as an air conditioning unit in the summer and heat in the winter. It's run on electricity. Its technology is similar to your refrigerator, correct?
Yeah, that's a pretty good description of it. It's these new modern high-efficiency models have a couple of characteristics. One is that they're split. So there's an outside piece and an inside piece. The outside piece, it pushes the fluid through the system, and in this case, it heats it up and pushes it through the system. And then inside, you see there's a unit that's usually placed up by the ceiling on the wall. And so that's why it's sometimes called a split system.
I think one of the nubs of the controversy, though, is that most people grow up thinking, well, at night I'll turn the thermostat down or whatever. you know, and when I'm more comfort, I'll turn it up. But their engineers are finding is what you want to do is set it at a temperature that's even higher than you might think and just leave it there. And that's hard for people to
It doesn't do. Like to cycle and work really hard. I sort of imagine it like somebody on a bicycle trying to go up a steep hill in a high gear. It likes to just stay at a low gear, a simple gear, and keep spinning and going at a steady little effort all along.
So that's the temperature that's going to be the most comfortable and going to save you the most money.
It will, because since it is the cheaper way to make heat, you want it to make as much heat as it can at all times. And then when it starts to get really cold and that one, because we're seeing that people are using them as a supplemental system. So we're not that you can't heat an entire house with these. You'd need more than one in most cases. But most people have an existing central furnace or boiler, and this is being used to supplement that. And so when it gets really, really cold out, and if you have a sizable house or if your house isn't very well sealed and insulated, then these two things are going to have to work together, both the heat pump and the central system. And so when the central system kicks on, it's going to heat up the rest of the house that can't be reached by the heat pump. And so we want that to happen as a backup, not as the first heating source. So like what we like to say, and we learned a lesson after Tux's article came out, that saying set it and forget it isn't really good enough. It doesn't explain sufficiently what is the best practice. What you want to do, it's true you want to leave it alone, but we suggest that people prioritize the heat pump and let it run. And one way to prioritize it is, as Tux suggests, set the temperature setting for the heat pump just a few degrees higher and set the temperature setting for your central system thermostat a few degrees lower. And part of the reason for that is just physics. As it, most people know, the heat pump heating unit that's on the wall in the room you're trying to heat is up by the ceiling. It's a few degrees warmer up there. And the central system thermostat is down low by your shoulder height. And there's a few degrees difference between that elevation. So it's if you don't create a difference between the two settings, then the heat pump will just turn itself off because it will already have reached the desired temperature. So we suggest you set that one a little higher and the central system a little lower.
And Rachel, this is where I wanted to bring you into the conversation. Do you find that many of your clients that are going with heat pumps are using it as a supplement to their main heating system?
Some are definitely using it for supplements, or they're trying to make their home efficient enough that they can just use it 100% and they keep their central system as a backup on the smaller houses. But yeah, and exactly as has been described.
So your central system is a backup. All over Maine, still the main form of heat is oil. So people might have an oil system and they may be thinking about upgrading to natural gas or something else. But instead, an option might be buying heat pumps, leaving your old oil system in as a backup, but not really using it.
Yep. And sometimes people are very gung-ho about wood, too. So they'll use wood and heat pumps. And if it's too cold for the heat pumps to keep up because they don't have enough of them, they'll use the wood. But still, you probably want to have some other non-wood-burning backup plan as well in case. But it's all a matter of doing the math. There's a way of calculating how much heat a house needs on the coldest day of the year. And the coldest day of the year is something that heating contractors look up on a chart. And when you have a polar vortex day and it's negative 17, well, the chart says it's supposed to be zero on the coldest day of the year. So everyone's going to be cold on the coldest
Oh, really? The charts that you are provided and that
exactly.
Research has worked out only go down to zero?
So you can build in a safety factor. Some houses have way more heat than they could possibly ever use, and they've been oversized, but sometimes you're cold because the chart says if you don't have much of a safety factor, you should be cold if it's negative 17 outside.
Tux, Richard just mentioned that some people like to heat their homes with wood. I know that you have something to say on this topic.
Well, my observation about burning wood, and obviously Mainers burn wood, but when you drive around the countryside, my pet peeve in the winter is to see wood stacked outside. Sometimes there'll be a little tarp on it. Like basically the analogy I say is like you went outside in a blizzard, but you put on a baseball hat. So that's not really going to do the trick. And wood needs to be dry, seasoned, in order to burn efficiently. If you don't do that, you waste a lot of money, you produce a lot of creosote, you create a lot of pollution. And I think I'd like to see a lot of Mainers move to that next level of knowing that wood needs to be in a shed, inside, under tarps, but not just sitting out there.
So the kind of tarp you get at the hardware store is not good enough?
Well, I think if it's the woven kind of tarp that you can see through, no, that's not going to last but one season. You need the heavy-duty thing. And also, this goes into the, you know, we talk a lot about heating systems here, but, you know, a lot of people, I think we were talking earlier before the show about your 40-year-old fireplace insert. You know, these are not that efficient anymore. What's happening in wood stoves is like what happened in smartphones. You know, there's a generation of wood-burning devices that will be coming on the market soon. They're basically smart wood stoves, I should say.
So will be coming on the market soon, not on the market now?
Some of the boilers are. There's a group down in Maryland called the Alliance for Green Heat, and they just had their wood stove challenge in November. And those were people bring very innovative, basically computer-controlled wood burners. Main Energy Systems from Bethel was there, and that one even produced electricity. They were charging a Tesla during the competition. So this is coming. But in the meantime, there are more efficient, you know, EPA stoves, and Michael's agency has rebates for stoves that meet a certain efficiency percent. I think you have on your website, you have a list of those stoves.
Right.
Well, we can segue into that. Tell me, Michael, how does one navigate the rebate and an incentive world when thinking about figuring out a heating system for one's home?
Well, there's two ways. One is you can hire a good contractor like Richard, and they should be pretty familiar with the offerings we have, the financial incentives for whatever kind of energy upgrade you're in the market for. The other is you can do some homework on your own by going to our website at efficiencymaine.com. And we try very hard to put every single piece of information relevant to any of the rebates that are offered up there on that website. Whatever rules might be applicable should be clearly explained there. And if you find something that doesn't seem that clear, you should write us a note and tell us that we could do a better job. But all of the information on every type of upgrade that we offer incentives on is on that website.
Well, we are talking about home energy on Main Calling. If you have a question, please give us a call. Send us an email. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org. Please keep it brief. You can tweet at Main Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Main Calling possible, as do Skudik Institute, pursuing collaborative solutions to critical environmental challenges through discovery. Support their work at skudikinstitute.org. And Houston & Company, celebrating 30 years of fine furniture making. Showroom and workshop in Kennebunkport and online at houstonandcompany.com.
President Trump says he has support from Democrats and Republicans for criminal justice reform.
These members have reached a bipartisan agreement. Did I hear the word bipartisan?
But time is running out for Congress to act. Does criminal justice reform have a chance in the lame duck session? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Travel is heading next to Italy, to Sicily. Consider joining us next May on another of our Maine Public Travel cultural explorations. You're invited to join Morning Edition host Erwin Gratz and other friends of Maine Public. Our Many Flavors of Sicily 10-day tour will involve sightseeing, tours, lectures, and music that will offer insight and understanding of Sicily and its people. Learn more about Maine Public's Sicily tour and schedule by visiting our website, mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, weather, options for home. Let me start over again. Today on the program, Home Energy Options. Joining me, Tux Turkle, staff writer focusing on energy with the Portland Press Herald, Michael Stoddard, executive director of Efficiency Maine, and Richard Riegel, Burbank, president and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Margaret calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Margaret, are you there? Shoot, looks like we lost her. We may be having trouble with our phones. We'll try a couple more calls a little bit later and see if we're going to have to depend on emails today. So I apologize for that. But before we go back to the calls, let's talk about some of the trends we're seeing. Richard, a lot of the people who are hiring you are people who are in a home that's new to them, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Now that home buying is back up in Maine, all those folks are looking at their house. And I think part of the reason why we got so busy in the summer and a lot of my colleagues got so busy early in the summer, which is usually a little quieter for insulation and such, is people felt that polar vortex hit them in early December on their very first winter, and it was a little surprising.
I did that. We moved from a smaller home to a larger home 17 years ago, and it was a very drafty and much larger home. That was a shock. That was
So I think when people buy a new house, they're planning on making improvements, and they want to know, how is it doing now? What can we do to improve it and make a plan? So that's definitely, I think, affected all the programs at Efficiency Maine, too, with all that happening.
Michael, are you busy right now?
We're really busy, and we'd like to even be busier. But I especially want to pick up on Richard's point, which is that when someone finds themselves in the process of buying a new house or getting ready to move into a new house or a new apartment, that is the moment. That is a really important time. You're about to buy some things and put them into that house that are going to be there for the next 20 or 30 years. Some of these heating systems will be there that long, decades, a generation. So it's a critical moment to make the wisest decision possible. And we recognize that sometimes the higher efficiency equipment will cost a little bit more up front. The price point is a little higher, and that's why our programs exist. We have financial incentives to help reduce that incremental cost. So we might we do offer $1,000 for insulation in each area of the house, the attic, the wall, or the basement. So you could get one of each. And if the house is all cleared out, there's no stuff in there yet, you haven't packed it full of boxes and whatever, that's the time to make a little bit of a mess and make that investment, because you'll be really glad for all the years that you live there. Same with the heating system. We have rebates on not only the central heating systems, like a high-efficiency oil boiler or a high-efficiency pellet boiler, wood stoves, as Tux mentioned, $500 off on the high-efficiency wood stoves. And then also heat pumps, $500 off on a heat pump.
So, Michael, you're talking about rebates and incentives available today, but Tux, you believe that in the future we may even see more.
Well, I think what we have to acknowledge, I know, Maine, you guys do a lot with politics. This show is not about politics, but we have to acknowledge that there's a change in administration, change in legislature, and energy policy is going to have a seismic shift in Augusta. And home energy is going to be part of that, I believe. So a context for this is there's interest in climate change. But we don't own power plants, most of us who are listening to this show. We own homes. But we can be involved with this in a broad sense, because if we burn oil or gas or have electricity that's gas or driven, then we're part of this thing. And we're going to see changes in solar policy. There may be more money for weatherization or efficiency. We just don't know. But I think it's safe to say this is a good time to pay attention next year and see what is going on in the legislature, see what Janet Mills wants to do with energy policy, because it can affect you at home.
We'll go to Luette calling from Portland. Let's see if the phones are working. Luette, are you there? Darn it. Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm going to ask people, if you will, please, to try and send us very quickly an email. Don't worry about typos, anything like that, to talk@mainpublic.org. Again, talk@mainpublic.org, or post something on our Facebook page to get your question into the guests. We'll be working on the phones while we try to figure that out. Richard, let me ask you sort of this broad philosophical question. You know, I live in a house. I'm pretending I live in a house with a big oil tank and a furnace, and I know I want to make a change. And my neighbor has a high efficiency gas furnace. My other neighbors just put in a couple heat pumps. I maybe would like the idea of a wood stove. It's all really expensive. How do I start thinking about it? How do I get my head around maybe planning for my home, not just this winter, but 5-10 years from now?
Well, I can speak from the perspective of seeing homeowners getting the advice they need to move ahead. And what I've seen is they find information either partly on their own or with trusted advisors. One good thing about the Efficiency Maine website is there's a whole list of vendors of a whole bunch of different services, from heating systems to energy audits and that kind of stuff. An energy audit could definitely be part of that process. That's what I do. But talking to several different people coming through the home and trusting, having some trusted advisors to work through the process. Now, the problem, though, is you may have several right answers, and sometimes your trusted advisors will say different things, which is even more confusing. But just know that there are basic principles that insulation is important in Maine. If you don't have insulation, you should insulate your house. If your house is leaky, you need to seal those air leaks. If your heating system is dangerous or not very efficient, there's something to be done there. But often there's several right answers. And I've seen advanced homeowners that study a lot of it themselves. There's a main tradition for that, trying to do it yourself, but getting some trusted advisors in the house, maybe an energy auditor and a heating contractor that you trust, would be a good start.
Michael, any thoughts? So,
well, I wholeheartedly share Richard's suggestion that you can do a little bit of homework on the internet and look at our website at efficiencymaine.com. There's this searchable list of all the contractors like Richard who do this kind of work. And you can indicate the town that you live in and the radius you'd like to search, and you can click on different kinds of icons for different kinds of services that might apply to what you think you want to do, including, if you want, to start with an energy audit to get some advice.
But Michael and Richard, would you guys say, though, that in most homes in Maine, the first thing that needs to be done is more air sealing?
Well, it's almost always a good option that it would be appropriate in almost every home. We've done some research on the quality of Maine homes and compared them to other states. And one thing that we found is that we have among the leakiest homes in the country. So the reason that the answer to your question is yes, Tux, is that A, it seems applicable in almost every home, and B, it's pretty cheap. It's a pretty low price point to get started with, and you get a lot of bang for your buck.
Right. And it seems to be a process, too. It's like not something you just say, all right, I've done that. Because anyone who owns a home for a while knows that they discover stuff as time goes by. And so if you're in a home for a while, I've found you need to go around and check all those places in the winter and say, oh, there's a draft. I didn't know about that one. But, you know, when you add those up, it's like having the proverbial window open all winter long.
Yep.
Sure. And, you know, it's funny, Richard, at my home, we've twice had an energy audit, and both times with a blower door. We did the energy audit with a blower door. We plugged up all the places that air was coming in. When we did another one, boy, the air was coming out in different places.
Absolutely. Well, it is difficult to do the high level of air sealing without that equipment. But it's very, very revealing. Number one, to understand exactly how leaky the house is compared to a reasonably tight house. So amongst the folks that call me, call our company, I typically see an air leakage rate of 1.5 to 3 times leakier than it really needs to be for a reasonably tight house. Sometimes it's a lot more. Sometimes it's 4, 5, 6 times. And sometimes the house was built in the last 10 years, and sometimes it was built in 1770. I've seen the full range, but there are some houses that aren't bad. And so it's important to get it tested. Just like if you step on a scale and you're having a health evaluation, you know, you want to, you know, am I overweight or not? It's the same thing with a house, and you can track your progress. If you want to do it yourself or you want to check up on it, the coldest days of the year, if it's windy or even if it's not windy, is when the house leaks the most. And just as Tuck said, you'll feel the cold air coming in down low. You won't see it, feel it leaving as much because the heat sneaks out on the upper floors. But it's definitely a good time.
I'm going to go to an email, then a call, and we're going to try a call. First, we'll go to the email, though. Bruce on Facebook says, while listening to the program today on energy issues in Maine, you may be able to drive or walk to our panel on this topic at 2 p.m., so in about 25 minutes, in the Skadamfa Library in Damariscotta. It's called The Case for Comprehensive Energy Plan for Maine, and it's being held by the Midcoast Green Collaborative and the Midcoast Outreach and Peace Center. So that's at 2 o'clock at the library in Damariscotta. Now trying to go to a call. This is Bill in Westbrook. I'm crossing my fingers. Bill, are you there?
I am.
Fantastic. Go ahead.
Wow, one worked. Good afternoon, and hello, Michael, and hello, Richard. I've worked with both of these gentlemen for a number of years. I'm retired and out of the business now, but after running the weatherization program for Habitat for Humanity, based out of Bath at the time, and looking at numerous homes in the low-income range for how to prep for winter, just time and time again, it's go high and go low. Go into the basement or under the structure and go high into the attic and let Mother Nature show you. You don't need a blower door necessarily to find some of the more egregious air leaks and infiltrations. Spiders are smart. They build their webs where they're going to catch the most, and that's where air flows are. So you can look at indicators and you know, very short money and maybe consulting with a company like Richard's and somebody who's trained to look for it. That's where the low-hanging fruit is, and anybody can prep for that stuff.
Okay, so looking for cobwebs. I've also heard using a candle. Is that a real trick?
Just don't set your house on fire.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, I mean,
candle.
holding it in your hand.
Well, they sell smoke sticks too. That's another safer way of doing
okay,
it.
Okay.
Or maybe possibly incense or something like that. But do be careful. But you know, using your hand for cold air coming in is pretty effective.
Yeah. Bill makes a great point that based on his experience, and I'm sure Richard would agree. You go into enough homes and you do start to see some trends. And we also did research on homes in Maine to get a sample, sampling of what's out there. And we found that, you know, a lot of the attics are in reasonably good shape. They have a decent amount of insulation because I think a lot of us got the message back in the 70s and 80s. Basements, however, remain relatively uninsulated. So you go down there and check out the foundation walls and the sill where the side of the house meets the foundation. If that's not insulated, that's a really good candidate and something that wouldn't be too expensive to get started with.
Okay. If you'd like to join the conversation, it looks like our phones are working now, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Maine Association of Nonprofits, empowering Maine nonprofits to adapt, thrive, and contribute in a fast and changing world. NonprofitMaine.org. And Fresh Eggs Daily, dedicated to backyard chickens and publisher of 101 Chicken Keeping Hacks, FreshEggsDaily.com. And Maine Community Foundation, celebrating 35 years of investing in Maine communities. Learn more at MaineCF.org.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program, How does one of the architects of international agreements deal with an increase in nationalism and a backlash against globalism? Ambassador Wendy Sherman has experienced politics and international diplomacy at the highest levels, including as the chief negotiator for the Iran nuclear deal. She says American diplomacy is in great danger today. Find out why on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Happiness is automatic. There's music in the air.
On the next Fresh Air, some great new roots and rockabilly Christmas songs performed in our studio by their composer, J.D. McPherson, and his band. Their new Christmas album is called Socks. Join us.
Oh, 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 oh. Soon the tree will be all lit up, sparkling as it goes. Today's anything but the same.
Tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, ways to keep your home warm or warmer this winter. My guest, Richard Regal Burbank, the president and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. Tux Turkle, a staff writer focusing on energy with the Portland Press Herald. Michael Stoddard, the executive director of Efficiency Maine. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. An email from Ray. I write in reference to insulating your home. The organization Window Dressers is a volunteer organization that make very affordable, custom-fitted, double-skinned window inserts that prevent air leakage through or around windows and the cold air from the outside inside of the window panes from getting into the house. Approximately 22% of the inserts we make are given free to low-income households. For more information, call 596-3073 or go to www.windowdressers.org. And we will also post that information on our Facebook page and webpage, but windowdressers.org, a great organization. I know that there's things going on all over the state. Just today, there's an event going on where AmeriCorps team from Husson University is building window inserts for low-income households, and that's going on right now from 8 to 8. Oh, they already built them there. The last day is from 8 to 5 today at Husson College. So a lot of people getting the message.
Jen, if you go on the website of Window Dressers, they list the locations and the dates where there will be other volunteer builds, and I couldn't recommend anything more highly. They're for good. The holiday season, you want to do something to help out your fellow citizen and be part of your community and do something for the climate. This is a win-win-win, and I highly encourage people to get involved in that, and if they can't make it to one of those, organize their own, because I think this is a movement that's sweeping the state and we can all be proud of.
An email from Rob. Is it worthwhile to get a fireplace blanket / blocker for when the fire dies down at night?
It probably depends on how well your flue seals. If your flue doesn't seal very well at all, then that can definitely help. But it is a bit tricky to seal the average one, so sometimes a little extra help with one of those devices. But if you're ever in a pinch, And you don't use your fireplace a lot, maybe you just use it for the holidays for entertainment and for that warmth of the family gathering. Something that's very low cost, you just have to remember it's there,
put a
contractor bag or some trash bag that's airtight and stuff it full of fiberglass insulation as a stuffer and stuff it up there. And that could temporarily seal the hole.
Yeah.
But there are products out there you can order and custom fit.
And I think they're all good in the sense that the damper is pretty leaky. I mean, it just is not tight because it's mortared around bricks. So there's always going to be air going up even if it's closed. So those ancillary products are good. But as you say, don't start the fire without taking them out.
That would be
very smoky.
Oh, smoky, smelly mess. Oh, my goodness. We're going to go to Matt calling from Knox. Hi, Matt. Go ahead.
Hey, how's everyone doing today?
Great.
Great.
Thank you guys so much for doing this show. It's a really important issue. So I've been installing heat pumps for many years here. And one of the things that we identified was the ongoing education about you know, servicing the heat pumps, but also how they work and how they function. And, you know, specifically for units that have, you know, turnover from renters that have heat pumps, there isn't often a educational opportunity. So we put together a whole bunch of YouTube videos on the InSource Renewables channel that are available to everybody on, you know, how the remote works, what the different modes are, what the most efficient way to run the unit is, and, you know, how to clean the filters, which has a big impact. And it's, you know, it's a couple hundred thousand views, and, you know, they're homemade. They're definitely Maine-based. They're a little bit hokey, but it supports that ongoing education. I hope more people make videos that are like it, and I know that they've been helpful for a lot of people.
Great, Matt, and we will link those as well to our webpage and our Facebook page.
Sounds great.
We'll go to an email from Chad. I just bought a small 1,000-square-foot home in Saco. I'm thinking about installing a radiant floor heating system with a combo water heater boiler. Thoughts?
Well, radiant floor is quite comfortable on the feet, but it does need to be done correctly. There are so many radiant floor heating systems that are inefficient because they're not properly insulated or installed, or if the floor is too thick and the water temperature is not the right water temperature. Houses are one of those things that we don't manufacture in a factory with tight tolerances. So each one is custom designed. And so many times I'm trying to help homeowners fix something. So thoughts, make sure you find someone to install it that knows about radiant floor heating systems and can give you good advice on whether you really should do it or not. And if you are installing it, make sure it's installed right. There's a lot of folks that can hook it up, so technically it's a radiant floor. But this is something that it's like baking. If your recipe's a little off, you could bake a hockey puck pretty easy.
Right, because we don't know from – we could go a whole show, but is it on a slab? Is a cellar below it? Is there any perimeter insulation? There's a lot of questions here.
So who would Chad look to? Would he look for somebody like you, or would he look for a contractor? Who would be the kind of person who'd give him the best advice?
Perhaps both. You know, I think a competent energy auditor can help them identify if there's other things that provide comfort, because probably you're not interested, you're not a big fan of radiant in and of itself. You might be a fan of comfort. And if your floors are cold, you'd like warmer floors, and that's one possible solution. There could be other possible solutions. And certainly a good heating contractor that knows a reasonable expectation of what to get from it. But it can be quite expensive to do it right, which is why there's often a lot of budget decisions made that aren't quite as effective. And then you're kind of stuck with something.
Right. And radiant floors also like heat pumps in the sense that you don't turn them up and down every night. You know, there's some thermal mass there. It takes time. So you're going to have to think about how are you going to live with the thing?
All right, Chad, good luck to you, and congratulations on your new home. We're going to go to Faye, who's calling from the Bethel area. Hi, Faye, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Hi, everybody. I wanted to ask about, we're thinking of downsizing and moving to a condo that's being built, and we have a choice, and I'm worried about just getting the heat pump system. It's very well insulated. The builder sounds like he's very meticulous about his building methods. And he says he has a winter heat pump system. You know, and I'd like to help the environment and the planet out by going with something like that. But I'm just worried about that as being the only system.
Well, I think as long as the math is done correctly, when you design a house for heating, you design, you can calculate an estimated heat loss, and then you need to have a heating system that supplies that heat, whether the heating system is a heat pump or a wood a central heating or what have you. It's when the math is off and the engineering hasn't been done that problems can arise. So it's very common for that to happen nowadays if it's a smaller building. But if the math is off, then it's not. So
if it's a condo, maybe others have been built and she can check
exactly
whether someone else has had a good experience with this.
And can check this week because it's going to be cold.
Richard, are you seeing people put in heating their homes exclusively with heat pumps if they have a smaller and a well-insulated home, or do they usually have some kind of an alternative system in case something goes wrong with the heat pumps or they can't keep up?
I think the folks that I tend to see are not in the more efficient homes. They're usually pretty cold, and they're dealing with much more fundamental issues, so they're looking at supplements. But the homes that I don't get to see because they're happy are those that are in insulated homes with heat pumps. And when I've crossed paths with my colleagues, there's so many heat pumps going into new construction, and that's the only heating source because they're in control of the whole process.
All right. Well, Faye, thank you for your question. An email from Rob. I moved into an old Victorian home in Portland. I'd like to update the heating system, but I'm not a big fan of the aesthetics of mini split heat pumps. I do have a big, spacious attic. Can you tell me how traditional ducted heat pumps, which might go into my attic, compare to mini splits?
Well, there's actually, I just saw in one of my colleagues' homes, we did some weatherization there, but he was installing ceiling-mounted heat pumps. I don't know how available they are, but it solves that issue. And a ducted system could work well. One of the problems with it is the cost of the distribution system. So you can evaluate various options, but you could have a ceiling unit. It doesn't have to be a wall unit anymore.
There are also outfits now. They're building like little enclosures for the heat pump to kind of hide it or make it look more, you know, it doesn't stick out like a piece of metal on your sticking on the side of your house. That's heat pump homes is kind of a side business now.
I'll also chime in that if you're in Portland, it's possible that your home is already being served with natural gas. And if your home is already on natural gas, you might want to look at some of those options because economically, if there's already a good functioning natural gas fired system in there, that's a pretty economical approach. And that may not be the best option for heat pumps unless you're thinking you want to do that for air conditioning reasons. But just keep in mind that that can be a pretty high efficiency and an economical system.
And I'm really glad that you brought that up, Michael, because we've had this big conversation about heat pumps. And that's probably because most of Maine does not have access to natural gas. But if you are in Portland or if you're in a community that has access to a natural gas line, high-efficiency natural gas furnaces are a good option, correct?
Correct.
Besides the furnaces, though, you can also get very efficient direct vent heaters, the ones that mount right through the wall. Renai makes a good one. There's a couple out in the market, and they're much cheaper than an entire central heating system if your home has enough air circulation. If you have a lot of rooms and it's all cut up, that's not going to work.
We'll go to Christine Siebert, who's calling from Bangor. Christine, we mentioned what's going on at Husson today. You're a part of that project, aren't you?
I am, yes. Yeah, we're billing about 300 inserts right now here at the Bangor Mall.
Wow.
That's
great.
Terrific. And is this something that you do every year?
It is. Yeah, they've been doing it for about 8 to 10 years across Maine, and it's been going on for a couple of years here in Bangor as well. This year's unique because there's starting last year, we had an AmeriCorps member. There's one from Husson and one from UMaine, and we work to provide low-income families in particular with free window inserts.
Wow. Well, terrific. Well, thank you for doing that good work. Have fun today and stay warm.
Thank you. Thank you. I greatly appreciate it.
Let's see. We're going to move on to a tweet. I think I saw this a second ago. Well, let's go to this email from David. I own rental property. Can the rebate program apply to rental property equally the same as my own home?
It does apply. I would be careful about whether or not to say it applies equally because we have a certain set of incentives, which is $500 per unit in homes of 4 units or less. Once you get bigger than that, and I don't know what this person's situation is, we would have you over in a different program, and the incentives are structured just slightly different. We consider that a commercial property. But the answer is yes, there are incentives for heat pumps in either situation. It's just that the formula is a little different.
Sure. We'll go to Elizabeth calling from Knox County. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I don't know if you managed to cover this already in the first 11 minutes of your show, but there's an idea of sectioning off a room. And I didn't mention earlier on the phone to somebody before the show that about the idea of large cardboard. I mentioned boxes. But be it dog fences or cardboard that get blanketed or sheets over them, there's ways to section around an area tightly to increase the heat of one area and have you and your pets within that area. So that way, in addition.
Sure. Elizabeth, thank you. And that's one of the oldest tricks in the book, to
absolutely
only live in one part of your house in the wintertime.
The house within a house. And sometimes it's one of the ways of maintaining an older historical home, but yet being livable.
At the same time, we are asking people to think carefully about the doors that are closed or open, because if you have a heat pump or any other kind of a supplemental heating system in one end of the house and you're hoping to get the most out of that and cover as much of the house as you can, if the doors are closed, that heat will never get out and take up any of the heating load of that other part. So we're encouraging people, if they have a heat pump in a smaller room or in a room that's at one end of the house, make sure that the doors adjacent to that are open so it can spill out into the other rooms and do as much work as it can.
Or if you have pipes running through a thing, sometimes people forget.
Right. You don't want to
freeze
your pipes.
Cold night. Pipes freeze.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I'm going to try to squeeze in one quick question. Abby, if you could be super quick, that'd be great.
Okay, I have an oil burner that's coming towards the end of its life. It's 25 years old, and I'm wondering at what point, what efficiency level that you get below that it's time to rethink another energy source.
All right, I'm sure a lot of people have that question.
Well, one of the hard parts about making that decision is many times that equipment is very durable. So it's so much easier if it's gone. Like if your car's like totaled, then it's an easy decision. It will usually hover in the low 80s in percent efficiency. If it's really old, maybe it's in the upper 70s, but it could stay in the low 80s forever almost. So at that point, it's really evaluating your other options. And sometimes you can keep that thing going longer, supplementing it with heat pumps, or maybe it's really time to get a gas.
So there's no magic number.
There's no magic number.
All right. Well, Abby, thanks for your question and to all of you who had questions today. And I apologize to those of you for whom I couldn't get to your question, a lot of them today. And thanks to our guests. That's Richard Regal Burbank. You just heard his voice, president and CEO of Evergreen Home Performance. Michael Stoddard, also here, executive director of Efficiency Maine. And Tux Turkle, a staff writer focusing on energy with the Portland Press Herald. Sandra Harris ran the board today. This program will broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, dealing with diabetes. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.